Welcome back to this month's journal review. We're covering the April 2026 issue of the Journal of the American Academy of Dermatology, and there are four pieces on the docket today: a national cancer database analysis on Medicaid expansion and Merkel cell carcinoma survival, a brief report introducing a new public education mnemonic called OddSpot, a systematic review on quality of life in transplant recipients with skin cancer, and an editorial taking a hard look at value-based payment in medicine. Let's get into it. First up is an original retrospective cohort study using the National Cancer Database, asking whether Medicaid expansion under the Affordable Care Act has actually moved the needle on survival for resected Merkel cell carcinoma. This is a nice companion to the melanoma and broader oncology literature on Medicaid expansion, but nobody had looked specifically at MCC, which matters because MCC is rarer, more aggressive, and arguably more dependent on rapid access to a multidisciplinary team than almost any other skin cancer we manage. Methodologically, the authors queried the NCDB from 2010 through 2020 for stage 1 through 3 MCC patients who underwent surgical resection and stratified them by whether their state of residence had adopted Medicaid expansion, using the NCDB's own expansion classification as of 2020. They also split the cohort temporally into pre-expansion and post-expansion eras, using 2014, the year expansion took effect, as the cut point. This dual approach, cross-sectional by state and longitudinal by era, is a smart way to triangulate the same policy question two different ways, and it's the same design template that's been used previously for melanoma and other cancers. So the authors are essentially extending a validated methodology to a new tumor type. The retrospective registry design is really the only feasible option here. You're never going to randomize patients to expansion versus non-expansion states, so a large national database is the pragmatic substitute, with the trade-off of losing individual-level granularity on things like recurrence and treatment timing. The results are genuinely counterintuitive on the surface and worth sitting with. Patients in expansion states actually presented with worse tumor biology, larger tumors, more nodal disease, more lymphovascular invasion than patients in non-expansion states. You'd expect that to translate into worse survival. Instead, despite this adverse feature burden, expansion state patients had significantly better 5-year overall survival, both in stage 1 to 2 disease and in stage 3 disease, and the survival advantage held up after formal multivariable adjustment, with expansion state residents and post-expansion era diagnosis each independently predicting improved survival with modest but statistically significant hazard ratio reductions. The magnitude of benefit is not enormous, 5-year survival differences in the range of a few percentage points, but the fact that it persists after controlling for stage, margins, lymphovascular invasion, and comorbidity is the clinically important signal here. Expansion appears to be buying patients better outcomes despite worse baseline biology, which the authors interpret as evidence that expanded coverage is improving downstream access to timely, adequate oncologic care, rather than shifting the stage distribution at diagnosis. The limitations are honestly stated and important. This is a retrospective administrative database, so there's no recurrence data and no information on treatment timing, which is precisely the mechanism the authors are hypothesizing drives the benefit, so it's frustrating that it can't be directly tested. There's also residual confounding from unmeasured regional differences in access, referral patterns, and facility type that state-level expansion status can't fully capture. For your practice, this isn't something that changes what you do at the bedside tomorrow, but it is a meaningful advocacy data point. If you're involved in policy discussions, tumor board program building, or health system planning around MCC care pathways, this adds MCC to the growing list of cancers where Medicaid expansion demonstrably correlates with survival benefit. Useful ammunition, but not practice-changing in the technical sense. Next is a brief report introducing OddSpot, a new mnemonic and visual tool for public skin cancer education, positioned as a complement to, not a replacement for, the ABCDE mnemonic we all know. The stated gap is real. ABCDE is 4 decades old, was designed for physician use, is written at a technical reading level, and doesn't capture nodular, desmoplastic, or amelanotic melanoma, nor does it really speak to basal cell or squamous cell carcinoma features at all. The tool itself spells out ODDSPOT, odd-looking, dry or scabby, discolored, spanning black, brown, pink, white, and combinations, shiny, puffy or painful, open, oozing, or bleeding, and transforming new or changing. This is a development and validation adjacent report rather than a clinical outcome study, so there's no patient cohort or survival data here. The methods are a literature review across textbooks and public-facing dermatology resources, combined with two anonymous public surveys totaling over 2,200 respondents, drawn from a mobile skin screening program and a leadership conference audience. The descriptors that tested best with the public were dry or scabby, discolored, puffy or painful, and open or oozing or bleeding. The authors also ran the final product through readability and clarity benchmarks, landing at a 6th grade reading level and scoring perfectly on the CDC's Clear Communication Index, which is the kind of objective accessibility metric that actually matters for a public health tool, since ABCDE's technical language has always been a real barrier for lay audiences. The authors are appropriately candid that this is not a diagnostic tool. It doesn't discriminate benign from malignant, and it doesn't fully capture early subtle lesions. And they explicitly flag that comparative validation against ABCDE is still needed. So the honest takeaway is, this is an interesting public health communication tool that you might reasonably point patients or community screening programs toward, particularly for populations where ABCDE's terminology is a real barrier, but it's not something with outcome data yet, and it's not going to change your own clinical screening language. Third is a systematic review, PRISMA-guided, synthesizing quality of life and psychosocial impact of post-transplant skin cancer in solid organ transplant recipients. The premise is straightforward. Skin cancer is the most common malignancy in this population. It drives repeated procedures and lifelong surveillance, and yet there had been no synthesis of the psychosocial burden literature to inform how we counsel and support these patients. The authors searched 5 databases across 4 decades and screened over 400 studies down to 11 that met inclusion criteria, 5 of which reported standardized quality of life scores that could be quantitatively pooled after rescaling every instrument onto a common 0 to 100 scale, oriented so higher always meant worse quality of life. A sensible normalization strategy given how heterogeneous patient-reported outcome instruments are, since a Skindex score and a short-form 36 score aren't natively comparable. The pooled results showed that transplant recipients with skin cancer had significantly worse emotional well-being, physical and mental health composite scores, and markedly worse sleep quality compared to transplant recipients without skin cancer. All statistically significant, and importantly, in domains that are clinically believable, given the burden of recurrent excisions and surveillance. Other instruments, including the Dermatology Life Quality Index and the World Health Organization Quality of Life Measure, showed mixed, inconsistent results without significant differences, which the authors attribute to instrument heterogeneity rather than an absence of true effect. The qualitative literature layered on top of this consistently described anxiety, depression, and diminished self-image, worsening with a higher cumulative burden of skin cancers, with female sex and younger age flagged as potential risk factors for greater psychosocial impact. The authors are transparent that instrument heterogeneity is the central limitation. Comparing a physical symptom-focused tool to an emotional domain tool to a global health status tool inherently limits precision. And they note that even a skin cancer-specific quality of life instrument couldn't be included here because it lacks a non-cancer comparator arm. This is a synthesis stage review, not a study generating new primary data. So there are no confounders or generalizability caveats beyond the pooling methodology itself. The practical takeaway is genuinely useful for anyone running a transplant dermatology clinic. This gives you evidence-based language to normalize the emotional and sleep burden your patients are carrying. And it supports proactively screening for anxiety and depression in transplant recipients with a heavy skin cancer burden, particularly younger and female patients, rather than treating psychosocial distress as an afterthought to the surgical and surveillance conversation. It doesn't change your surgical management, but it should change how much bandwidth you devote to the psychosocial conversation at the visit. Last is an editorial, a commentary piece with a provocative title. Value-based payment is not value-based care. First, do no harm. There's no methods or results section here. This is an argued opinion piece, so I'll walk through the argument as the authors built it, rather than force it into a data framework it doesn't have. The authors trace value-based payment from its 2006 origins in the Physician Quality Reporting System, through the Affordable Care Act's Accountable Care Organizations and Bundled Payments, to MACRA's merit-based incentive payment system in 2015. Their core claim is that despite nearly two decades and enormous institutional investment, there's no consistent evidence value-based payment has sustainably lowered costs or improved quality. And they cite evidence pointing the other way. Increased administrative burden, worsened disparities, and accelerated consolidation. They build the argument on several specific mechanisms. First, quality metrics lag behind evolving clinical evidence, so providers end up optimizing for outdated targets rather than current best practice. Second, the infrastructure costs of metric reporting favor large, well-resourced health systems over small or solo practices, and they cite data linking greater accountable care organization penetration to physician practice consolidation, and in turn, higher costs. Third, and this is the sharpest point, countable metrics create a perverse incentive to avoid complex or high-risk patients, and they back this with data showing safety net hospitals are penalized more often, and that clinicians caring for higher-risk populations tend to score worse under MIPS, receiving negative payment adjustments for the very reason they're doing harder work. Finally, they point to physician time spent on MIPS-related administrative compliance as a major contributor to burnout. Their proposed remedy is to suspend broadly deployed value-based payment schemes and pivot toward quality improvement principles instead. Small, iterative tests of change validated locally before any system-wide rollout, paired with embedding quality improvement thinking into medical education so clinicians see themselves as active drivers of value rather than passive responders to externally imposed metrics. As with any editorial, there's no limitations section to relay because there's no primary dataset. This is a position piece, and you should weigh it as one, though it's grounded in the cited health policy literature on MIPS costs and safety net penalties. The practical relevance for you, if your practice or health system is investing heavily in MIPS reporting infrastructure, or feeling squeezed toward consolidation by accountable care organization pressures, this piece gives you a well-referenced counter-argument to bring to a practice management or advocacy conversation. It's not something that changes clinical decision-making, but for anyone navigating negotiations about alternative payment model participation, it's a useful frame for that discussion. That wraps this month's rundown, a policy-relevant survival signal in Merkel cell carcinoma tied to Medicaid expansion, a fresh public education tool worth watching for future validation data, a systematic review that should shape how you talk with your transplant patients about the emotional weight of their skin cancer burden, and a pointed editorial challenging the value-based payment consensus.